I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Around Leeds, there are rumours of a list that exists deep in one of Victor Orta's many notebooks. On that list, there are a large number of players broken down per position on the football pitch, all of whom are potential replacements who can be brought in at Leeds United should the need arise. Hello and welcome to Orta's List, a new series on All Stats, Aren't We?, which is dedicated to scouting footballers around the world in a bid to create our own version of Victor Orta's List. I'm John McKenzie and I'll be joined throughout the series by All Stats, Aren't We?'s very own Josh Hobbs and Scouted Footballer Leeds Live's own, but also a little bit our very own too, Joe Donoghue. Joe, how you doing, mate? You're on mute.
I was on mute, so that's a very good start. We'll just put that down as the dress rehearsal.
Smooth start to the show.
I'm very good, John. Thank you very much. How are you? How are you both?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad it's taken us 5 episodes and we're still messing things up. So, you know, no professionalism from us, but I'm doing well. Josh, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. Thank you. This is my first time on here and I've actually had a haircut. So I can't get mocked for my hats this week.
Yeah, and this week we are doing everything very simple, which is just a Q&A. We're going to talk about a few players who've been thrown up by the rumour mills recently, a few exciting players, which is nice. It's nice to have some fun players to have a look at. And then we're going to go through some of the questions that you guys have sent through. We had lots of questions, so thanks very much for that. And it's been great to have you guys engaging with us throughout the whole of this series. So thank you for that. But hopefully we can get to your questions in due course. I think the best thing for us to do probably is to start off by talking a little bit about what it was that we did this series. So we scouted 4 positions, came up with 4 players, and then bought them on 5 Yards, which is a scouting platform. This is our squad on 5 Yards. So as you can see, we bought Ryan Kent, Boubacari Soumaré, Romain Perrault, and Emi Buendia. And you can see already that we're starting to reap the rewards of those players. Yeah, if you are interested in 5 Yards, do head over to check them out. But I think what we'll do first is we'll jump in and talk about the 3 players, I think, who we've been linked with recently. So those 3 players are, let me just pull them up. Taliafico, his first name is what, Nicola? Is
that right? Yeah.
I'll go with Noah Long first. And then the first mention in this podcast of Kvicha Gvaratskhelia. How was that for a
I thought that was not decent, bad. Mate.
Yeah, I think for a first goal.
I spent all day doing that. Yeah. So who should we kick off with first? Should we get Nicola Taliafico out of the way? Josh, I know you watched the Eredivisie quite a lot. So what are your thoughts on Nico Taliafico as a potential left-back replacement for Gianni Alioski?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this one, because, I mean, I don't think he's been linked to us by, I haven't heard him through any sort of particularly reliable names, so it might not be one to go too deep down the rabbit hole on, but I like him. I think he's a really good player. I think in terms of a lot of what we talked about in our left backs episode, where we wanted someone that had the technical ability to be coping well in our build up and playing through pressure. I think playing at Ajax, like, that's he's used to build up. Maybe they don't get really, really pressed in the Eredivisie because they're a dominant team. But he's certainly a very technical player. He's progressive. I like his passing from deep. Is very good. He makes lots of runs forward, gets into the box. And I think, yeah, I think he's basically an upgrade on Alioski in pretty much every way. Maybe not the same engine on him as Alioski, but I think probably not many players have got that. He's certainly not going to be as buzzy is the word I'm going to use for Alioski.
Frenetic.
Frenetic is probably the better one, but at the same time, I'm not going to expect Taliafico to be sort of just panicking and blasting the ball anywhere or randomly kicking it off for a corner when there's no reason to do that. But yeah, in the defensive phase, I don't think he's going to bring the same intensity. My issue with him is that he's 28, and I think pretty much every player that we have had on our list has been pre-peak, and I think it just doesn't make sense to me for us to sign a 28-year-old when we have a squad full of 28, 29, 30-year-olds. I would want a 23-year-old, I think.
Yeah, it's been a long time since Nico Taliafico appeared on the pages of scouted football handbooks, Joe. So what do you make of Taliafico? No doubt you've caught him. He's been playing European football quite a bit recently. So what do you make of him as a potential option?
I mean, I think he is a potential option. I think the links have been born out of the fact that Mark Overmars, who's the sporting director at Ajax, I think he's been pretty open in saying that that Taliafico is angling for a move. That he is, I think there's been some sort of agreement that he could leave. And I think the natural sort of your mind then goes to, okay, which teams need a left back who he'd be a good fit for? And Leeds comes up at the top of the list, which is probably where those links have come from, rather than, as Josh was saying, sort of no reputable sources have sort of been linking him very heavily. I mean, we know how Victor Orta operates sometimes. You know, it's with moves like Robin Koch, it's very very diligent and very, very planned out. But then there are other ones like Rafinha, where he became available at the 11th hour, and they moved for him. So who knows? It might be one of those that we see over the course of the summer. But I think stylistically, I think he'd be a good fit. I think his intensity, while not frenetic, I think is quite good. I was quite impressed with his pressing. I always have been, and you kind of have to be to play in an Ajax team. You know, he's a constant threat to attackers when they're on the ball, but also when they've got their backs to goal, which I think is something which is always going to be quite important when you're going to be doing a lot of defending, especially in the Premier League. And I was quite interested to see, this is in no way analytical. This was just an observation of mine. And it's based on, it's from fbref.com, which is a fantastic resource. I'm sure you both know, but I was interested to see that in the similar players section to Taliafico, Joel Veltman, who's obviously his former teammate at Ajax, was the most similar to Taliafico, based on 800 or 900 or so minutes in the Champions League. And then second was Luke Ayling. And third was Dan Byrne, WWE's very own Dan Byrne, who we're all no doubt very fond of. And then Alioski himself was seventh. So it was quite an interesting list. I was like, oh, okay. I hadn't sort of made the comparison between Ayling and Taliafico before, but I can see where it's coming from in terms of the numbers. But yeah, he's a very combative, energetic defender who perhaps picks his moments a little bit more than Alioski. So yeah, I could see it being a good stylistic fit. Do I think it'll happen? Probably not. Mainly because, as Josh said, the age range and sort of maybe learning a few lessons from the Rodrigo move.
So in terms of the age, do we think that Leeds will seriously be considering players in that sort of age range?
I think you can never rule out players that are going to be a perfect fit for this team. You know, if the recruitment staff identify somebody who is absolutely you know, this is somebody who's going to massively boost our, you know, our chances of finishing higher in the league, then I think it would be foolish to ignore them based on their age. But I mean, there was something that you guys shared that this was it today or was it yesterday? It was sort of an age breakdown of the Leeds squad, and it's kind of like a steps leading off to a jumping off point, where you've kind of got minutes which are covered, which have been played by up and coming players, those sort of approaching the peak, those in their peak. And as Josh was saying just before, the vast majority of the minutes that have been played by Leeds players this season are those who are in their peak age, so around the 27 to 30 point. So it would be frugal frugal is probably the wrong word. It would be sensible to recruit on the more up and coming side, because then you get a few years to bed them in, and then they can sort of replace the players who are then who are 29, 30 now, who can then who are sort of coming to the end of their shelf life at Premier League level.
I'd be a bit worried that if we signed him, we might be thinking in 2 years' time we need a left back again, because we know that with age curves, players can sort of suddenly drop off after a certain point. I mean, that doesn't happen really often. Obviously, we've got older players in the team, and they're doing really well in the Premier League. But I just don't want us to be in 2 years' time wanting another left back. I'd like in 2 years' time to think, right, we've basically got this squad as we need, and we're just going through a little bit of yearly churn instead of, oh, we need a long-term player again.
I'm just thinking of some of the players that we brought in. So we obviously brought in Rodrigo, who turned 30 recently, and Diego Llorente, I think, is he 27? Mm-hmm. So he's that sort of end of the spectrum in terms of age. So I don't think that the club would necessarily not be considering players because of age. But I do agree with you, Josh, in so far as I have a little bit of a worry that we are bringing in a lot of players within the same sort of age bracket. And we already have a lot of players who are towards the end of that, you know, 27 to 30 bracket. So we've got players like Luke Ayling, Liam Cooper. I mean, Liam Cooper's obviously over 30, but you've got players like Stuart Dallas as well. And the worrying thing is that a lot of those players are quite important for us. And you don't want to just get to a point where in, you know, as you said, 2 years' time, it's not just simply having a left back who we need to replace. It's having, you know, four or five players in the team who are within that range that you talked about, where they could potentially start dropping off physically. I think as part of like a squad churn thing, you need to just have a view to keeping an eye on the sort of ages that you have, and you don't want to load too many people within that same bracket, so that you don't have to do a huge sort of bit of surgery in one summer in a couple of seasons time. But let's move on and talk a little bit about some of the other players. So we'll start off with Gvara Shkelia. I'm going to slowly reduce his name down until I'm saying KK, but we had a question from Jackie Buckets. He said, we'd be interested to hear your thoughts on the Georgian winger. So there we go. It's begun. Also, if there are any other positions you can see as potentially adding to, and says, please tell me I'm not crazy thinking we should go for Cade Cowell from San Jose. We'll start with you on this, Joe. Have you had the chance to watch much of the Georgian winger?
The Georgian winger. Can we call him the Georgian Alan Saint-Maximin, just for purposes of ease? No, I think, Kvicha Kvaratskhelia, I think, as I've also been practicing. I haven't spent the afternoon sort of on Forvo with the pronunciation, to not say it at least once on the live stream. But the thing that always struck me about him was that he just seems to go the long way around every time. You know, he's very much a I'm going to do it myself type of player, which I think is, I mean, it's admirable because he's got a lot of confidence for his age. He's around 20, 21. The only thing he's got a good strike on him. He can take a good kick in, which he's had to do quite often this season. But is he going to have the opportunity to you know, just vroom past players multiple times a game, in the same way that Saint-Maximin does at Newcastle? Because, you know, obviously their default setting is 10 behind the ball, so that obviously gives you a lot more room to burst into. I mean, I liked what I saw. I can see why a club who play very much transition football would be interested in a player who appears to be, you know, very, very, very good at dribbling, very good at beating players, very good at, you know, changing that turn of pace, just turning on the dynamism in a split second, and just constantly having that head up, direct running style. I can see why the club will be interested in that if the interest is genuine. I mean, the thing that I thought as well was, obviously he's a Georgian winger who's 20, 21 years old, playing in Russia. You can pretty much put every single Leeds player in this squad into one of three sort of linguistic categories, which is either Spanish, Portuguese, or English, or English as a second language, because you've got, you know, Casilla, Llorente, Pablo, Rodrigo, who can all speak Spanish. You know, Rafinha, Costa, Rodrigo can all speak Portuguese. And then you've got the bulk of the players who came up from the Championship, who are obviously predominantly English-speaking, British-based players. And then you've got the outliers, sort of like Robin Koch, who's German but can speak English, as showed on the Leeds United pod. Alioski's multilingual. Strouk can speak English. Berardi can speak English. Click can speak English, and Melier as well. Aside from that, that's the only issue that I would have with sort of bringing a player who perhaps would struggle a little bit to comprehend the very precise and specific footballing ideas and concepts that Marcelo Bielsa would want. I mean, you know, that's what he was saying the other week, wasn't it? Where he was saying, you know, this is why I mean, sorry to everybody who has to listen to me speaking Spanish, but it would dilute the meaning of what I'm trying to say if I tried to say it in broken English. So that is something which was kind of just going off in my brain as I was watching him just dribble past player after player, because that did get quite repetitive and it is quite entertaining. But I was wondering what your thoughts would be on that, because I didn't raise it beforehand.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough to say his name, isn't it? I guess it wouldn't take too long to learn how to say stop dribbling in Russian as well. But yeah, it's an interesting one. It seems to me that it's just a really sort of high risk transfer in a lot of ways, bringing a player like that. It's risky enough, I think, to bring players across from Russia, which is why we haven't seen huge amounts of Russian players being brought over. And I don't really know the ins and outs of Russian transfers. I do know that Russian nationals have a premium put on them because they are because they have this sort of quota limit for Russian players in the Russian Premier League, and so good Russian players can have a premium put on them. I don't know whether or not Kvaratskhelia would have that necessarily, because he's Georgian, but I don't really understand how the sort of former Soviet states fit into the Russian Premier League. So I was kind of interested in that aspect of it as well, that this is not a regularly trod pathway for players to come into. And whenever I've spoken to scouts, they've always said, oh, we're always a little bit iffy on bringing players over from Russia, because there's so much that can go wrong with these. In the same way that I think when you talk to scouts about bringing players over from South America as well, there's always that sort of hesitancy, being like, well, we like them to make the step by going to maybe a different league first and seeing if they can make that step up. So I think it's well worth maybe trying for it. I think that's what we did with Rafinha. I think part of the reason we got Rafinha was because we were happy to just jump in last minute and go through the effort of just bringing him in, which is what I think a lot of elite clubs probably wouldn't want to do. So I guess if you do that and it works out, you risk losing them quickly, but you get them for a season if it works out. And if not, I guess if you don't get it for too expensive a transfer fee, then it's not the worst thing. But I'm by no means an expert on the ins and outs of recruitment in clubs, so that is very much Josh. So I'll hand over to you, Josh. What's your thoughts on this?
don't know if I'd say expert by any means, but yeah, I think that's a really valid point, that the whole language thing. I think you did forget the French speaking crew of Patrick Bamford, No,
of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
The worrying thing is that the person who probably can speak Georgian, or the most closest cognate to Georgian, is probably Gianni Alioski, and he probably won't be around. But also, imagine if he was the only point of contact here.
Poor lad.
You'd have no idea what was going on, would you?
Poor lad. But yeah, I think in terms of him actually as a player, I think he would definitely offer something that I don't think we've really got. It's interesting that, yeah, in terms of the profile that we spoke about in the last episode, right-footed left winger, he ticks that box, but maybe he's not so much of that sort of inside forward that we were maybe talking about, although it's not to say that he can't come inside, and he obviously does with his right foot and looks to score cutting in like that. But I in what I watched, I thought he wanted to go outside a lot, almost like he would carry the ball with his right foot, show it a bit to the fullback, and then just burst down the line, which I thought was quite interesting, because then once he gets down to the byline, it's like he wants to open up and pass it back with his right foot into the center of the box, which I think you're sort of asking to lose the ball in doing that, because in that motion of turning, you can be tackled. He is very sharp in his turns, and I think that helps, and he's still able to do that a lot. But I felt like once he got to the byline, I just thought, cut it back, like with your, just play across with your left back across there. But yeah, he's a really exciting dribbler, and as John said in our chat before this, it is a bit like Bale in the way that he will sort of square someone up and then just burst away, a bit like that sort of classic goal from the Copa del Rey final, where he just basically wants to burn someone down the outside. And he's got that sort of tall, wiry frame. He hasn't got the power that Bale grew to have, but he may still have that when he's only 21 or whatever his age is. But he has real running power, if not upper body power. So I think that would be exciting, because I think Harrison, he can take players on, and I think he's quite good at, if he gets crowded, he can sort of quickly shift his feet and go through two players. But I don't think you'll often see Harrison around halfway burn it all the way down to the byline. So that would be something completely different. But I just found it interesting that he was sort of half the profile that we were looking at last time, but then almost like a hybrid, like he's a classic winger, but he's right-footed playing on the left. Just that stood out to me.
Yeah, I mentioned that maybe there's certain similarities, at least in terms of play style, to Rafinha, perhaps, in that he does seem to be a player who likes to be quite direct. And we don't really have that on the other side with Harrison, right? Harrison is more of a player, I think, who likes to hold the ball up, try and get himself isolated to players and then go around them. Whereas this is very much like first touch is always going to be positive, always trying to get into dangerous spaces, always trying to beat players just through speed. And I think our friend Ethan was talking about his dribbling ability and how he's got good feet. And I agree with that. I do think he is a good technical dribbler, but I think instinctively he just wants to be that direct kind of player who is going to move the ball quickly first and then think about what he's going to do with it, rather than someone like Harrison. I think it's maybe the other way around, who will slow it down and try and think about where he's going to go next. So I wondered if either of you had any quick thoughts on that aspect of him, whether or not he's maybe a little bit too similar in profile, at least in terms of game sense, to someone like Rafinha. Joe, what do you make of that? Do you think there'll be two? Would it be a problem having two similar wingers, or do you think that's potentially the way that we're going to go next season, with two really direct players, so that you can get all of your ball progression in the channels down the line? We've seen that quite a bit this season, rather than maybe a little bit more patient build-up play that we've seen in previous seasons.
I think there are benefits to that. I think there are benefits to having balance in terms of on either flank, in terms of having a two players who are stylistically very similar. I do worry that if you do have two players who are very similar in that regard, when you don't really have, you essentially wouldn't have a plan B in that sense, would you? You know, you wouldn't be able to swap wings as we've seen on rare occasions, which Bielsa has done with Harrison and Rafinha, with varying success. I think one of the things which I wasn't sold on with Kvaratskhelia is that when I was watching his games, there just didn't seem to be a great deal of defensive work. He seemed to be not selfish in terms of, you know, the whenever the ball came to him, it was just direct running, but it was more the fact that I thought, you know, a lot of the work that Harrison does, and that's one of the things we said on the previous episode that flies under the radar, is that he does a lot of the defensive work. He supports Alioski a lot. You know, he got pelters, I think, for when, who was it, scored for Liverpool, was it Mane, when Trent Alexander-Arnold went round the outside because Alioski had moved into the middle because he was picking up Klinsmann or whoever it was. But Harrison was all the way around on that side. And yeah, he was probably a yard off, but he was all the way back in the penalty area, in Leeds' own penalty area. I'm not so sure you'd get that with Kvaratskhelia from the admittedly few clips I've seen of him, few matches I've seen of him. But I think, I hate using the term, but I think he'd probably be a bit of a luxury player rather, more than anything, because, you know, yeah, you can have that balance, but is there any use in having the balance when you essentially leave one side of your entire team sort of open to having to be defended by one player? And the likelihood is that one player who's going to be on that left-hand side at left-back is going to be a new face anyway, so is going to need to be walked through games to begin with. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting one to see what happens, because, you know, changing an entire flank will be... it'll be a task to, I think there will be teething problems, and we have to expect that. And I'm not entirely sold on Kvaratskhelia being that player necessarily.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Noah Long as well, because he's the one that I think we're all quite excited about. He will, I think, be appearing on Scouted Football. Is he in the next handbook? Is that right? That's all.
I think he is. Yeah. A little teaser. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something to look forward to.
Not supposed to reveal the secrets.
State secrets. You know. Hey,
it was on Twitter.
It's transparency. That's what we're all about. Listen.
But yeah, a really exciting player. A lot of people will have seen him playing in the under 21s Euros. He had, a pretty good. I guess it's the qualification stage of that competition. I thought we looked really, really good. That was the first time I'd really sat down and watched him quite a bit, and I saw a lot there to like. Josh, again, this is another Dutch player, but he's playing in the Jupiler League at the moment for Club Brugge. What have you made of Noah Long so far?
Yeah, this would be really exciting if this comes to pass. I think he's great. He is very different, I think, to some of these other players. Again, he's a right footer who can play on the left, but I think he's a bit of a multifunctional forward. So I think I don't know that he would really fit in the attacking midfield role in our particular setup, not at this stage in his career. But I think he could actually play on the left, he could play on the right, and he could even play up front. He would be a very different style to Bamford. But I think if he were to play up front, he might play that role a little bit more like how Kamar Roof played that role in Bielsa's first season, where it's just all about basically darting runs, just dragging defenders around. And that's sort of how I would describe his game anyway, that it's all just about sharp movements, and he's always looking to find space in the box. So if he comes out of the box to receive the ball in a wide area, whereas someone like Ryan Kent, who I talked about effusively in the last episode, he wants to dribble at players, take them on, get towards the goal basically directly. Noah Lang is more like he's going to play the ball quickly to a teammate and then make another run, and then he's going to receive it and he's going to make another run. And he's just all about quick combinations, quick movements. And if he's going to beat a player, it's because he's creating space to either play that pass or he thinks he can shoot. But it's not to say that he can't dribble, because he's got really great technical ability. He's really agile, and he scored a really nice goal against man. Why have I just suddenly forgotten? Like one of the most famous teams in Belgium,
Anderlecht.
That's it, Anderlecht. They went straight out of my head.
The rest of us. You remember Gallia though, didn't you?
I never said his name. I even was a bit tentative saying Noah Lang there, and I've said like Lang, Noah Lang. But he scored a really nice individual goal against Anderlecht, beating two players and then shooting into the corner. So he's got that ability. I think he maybe lacks a little bit of explosiveness in his like first step. So I don't think he can necessarily like beat players from a standing start in the same way. I think he can sort of be knocked off the ball a bit easier than some of these other players that I think have got a bit more about them, like a lower center of gravity. Well, he's got a low center of gravity, but it's like he can just, I think he's maybe not quite got the bulk, so he can get knocked off it. But I think he's probably the most intelligent player out of any of these. He can see a pass, but more than anything, he just knows where to be in the box to find space to either get an assist or score himself. I think he scored 14 goals this season, which that's super impressive. I was saying earlier that I think there's a little bit of this. Maybe you guys might think I'm stretching this, but I think there's a little bit of Thomas Müller in the sense of just being able to find space in the box, but not as a striker, just as a supporting player, find space in the box and score regularly. So I think that would be a player profile type that's just completely missing from our squad, and he would get plenty of game time on either wing or as a striker. So I would love it if this happened.
Yeah, and I think it was you, Josh, who mentioned that you think that Noah Lang has the highest ceiling of these three players.
I think so.
Yeah, obviously Taliafico has probably hit his ceiling, but
I think I meant more between Kent.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ryan Kent and the Georgian winger and
Kvaratskhelia. Kvaratskhelia.
I think you pretty much nailed it there. Joe, I'll go to you. In terms of the exciting aspect of Noah Lang being that you know there is a lot of scope for him to improve, how do you view this transfer in that light, in terms of, you know, this is someone who, yes, will raise the floor of the squad at first, but he could very much push the ceiling of this squad as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with both things that you just said there. But I think the most exciting part of Noah Lang and potentially being a player on the radar is that he's a former teammate of Pascal Strauss. So, you know, they see those two create a little bromance. So I think they played 7 games together at under-19 level some years ago. So, yeah, there's they go way back. But, yeah, it's interesting that you compared him to Thomas Müller, Josh, because I was thinking he was very Dutch in the way that he's similar to what Donny van de Beek was like at Ajax, in that, you know, he might not spend a great deal of time on the ball in the game, but it's rather that movement. You can just coast into the box somewhere, sort of unnoticed. And from there, you know, he's a very confident finisher. You know, he doesn't need a lot of time to pick his spot, pick his shot. He'll fire one off. And that's kind of contributed to the fact that he scored so many goals this season, is because he does take so many shots, which I think, you know, speaks to his confidence in front of goal. He's not a hesitant player. You know, he's very much he knows what he's doing. But I like the Muller comparison in the sense that he does sort of in the translated version of Raum Deuter, the space investigator. He is essentially, that's what he is. He operates in the half spaces. He's, you know, we'll see him described as a winger, but he's not. He's a wide forward. Sort of, if you get in, you know, into the specifics, you know, because he can play anywhere across the front. And I was making this point yesterday that, you know, the club, you have to be intelligent with your recruitment, because, you know, the magic money broadcast TV revenue tree, it will not keep rolling like this forever. So you kind of have to be smart with your investments. And football players will, I think it'll be very doubtful that we'll see football players going for the likes of money that that Neymar and Mbappe went for a few years ago anytime soon. So you have to be smart, and you don't want to be dropping 30, 40 million on players who aren't going to be suited to the system. I think with Lang, he's somebody who is going to be versatile. He could probably deputise, as Josh was saying, at centre forward. If, you know, God forbid, Patrick Bamford got a serious injury, he could also play. I mean, he predominantly plays on the left as a sort of a left forward, but I really like the way that he receives between lines. He receives with his back to goal, which I think we very rarely see Jack Harrison do. I think I'm tempted to say that sort of an innate understanding of he has of where and when to pass between lines. You'll always see him sort of flicking through sort of little reverse passes, which he's done consistently at every level, which is always quite encouraging, because, you know, obviously, if you go up from the under 17, under 19 Eredivisie to playing for Young Ajax in the Eerste Divisie, then the Eredivisie, which didn't really get loads of minutes in, but the Jupiler League, as you said, John, he's risen to the challenge at every point. And while I described Kvaratskhelia as a luxury player, I'd say that Long is probably a high risk player. He will give the ball up a lot. His first touch isn't always great, but he's probably going to be a lot more creative. In the sense that he has the capability to create for himself and for others, which I think is probably something that you wouldn't get with Kvaratskhelia.
I felt like he's a lot less of a transitional player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's not that he doesn't have skills in transitional play, because I think he does. He's got decent speed. And as I said, he can take people on, but I think Kvaratskhelia is much more like, if we were countering, you would want him on the ball, because pace and beating people down the line. And whereas I think Lang would be more, if we were playing against a team maybe defending a bit deeper, and we just needed to keep the ball moving and players moving to create space, he is the ideal player at that point.
A Brighton, for example.
Yeah, exactly. A Brighton, a Wolves, those teams that we struggled to get through, he's the type of player that I want in there, because he's going to pop up somewhere that none of our other players are going to.
It's the combinations for me. It's always been the combinations that he'll sit between the lines, and it makes that team make a decision. Are you going to press up with one of your centre halves and to try and nick the ball off his toe when you know that pass is going to come into him? But then obviously leave the gap in behind for somebody like Bamford, or potentially a Rafinha to flit in. It's the combination play, you know, how he's very comfortable with being in receipt of wall passes. You know, he will knock it around the corner a little bit. I think that's something that we don't really have at the moment, mainly because, as you say, the games have been very transitional. But when you come up against a team who are well drilled in defence, who can quite comfortably sit into a compact seven, which Brighton and Wolves probably do quite well, as soon as they take the lead, then yeah, I think Long's probably the player that I'd take in there. But, you know, the fact that he's not a transitional player probably comes from the fact that he's never had to play in a team which has been overly transitional, because, you know, you've come through, obviously you're playing in the best academy in the Netherlands, and then your first real taste of professional football at a regular level is it with Club Brugge, who are at the moment undoubtedly the best team in Belgium. So, yeah, it's that's a very good point, actually, that Thomas has made there. That, yeah, the vast majority of the goals come from within the width of the goalposts. That tells you one thing and one thing only. He's constantly getting in good areas. And if Harrison's not in those areas, then, you know, there's a reason to say that there's, you know, there's competition for his place.
Mm. Yeah, one more thing I would just say on Lung is that he's another player who I feel comfortable being able to hold the ball up in possession a bit as well, which I think is really important, because part of the problem we have at the moment is that we aren't getting players who are going to just slow the play down and allow the team to catch up with the ball. To a certain extent, I feel as though with Kvaratskhelia, you're going to see a player who's going to be really direct, and it's going to be about getting a few players forward at once. And yeah, okay, we might lose the ball, we'll drop back, pick the ball up and go again. That's why we're in sort of transitional phases quite a lot at the moment. But I think it would be nice to have a player like Lang who, you know, can just hold on to the ball a little bit. A lot of what we're doing at the moment, I think, is because we don't have any of those players. So it would be nice to add a few more players with that kind of skill set as well.
It's worth just saying that he's transferring to Club Brugge this summer. He's on loan from Ajax, but they will make it permanent this summer. But that's not to say that he couldn't be bought, because, I mean, that just happened with RB Leipzig buying Sorloth from Trabzonspor immediately after he signed from Crystal Palace. Hmm. But just worth pointing that out in case people are questioning that.
Yeah, so he's on a loan to buy, which probably will be brought into effect, but yeah, that will probably depend on how much he wants to move into, and I suspect he probably would want to move into the Premier League, obviously, because it's a bit of a bigger shot window.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm aware that we are doing a question and answer session, and we're two-thirds of the way through and we haven't done any questions and answers. So let's move on quickly. We had lots of questions. Thanks for your questions. I've tried to group them somewhat. So I started off with general positional questions. So just a quick fire question first from Loop, who says, can you rank the four positions in order of priority? That's the four positions that we looked at in this series. So that was a left back, a central midfielder who can also cover for Calvin Phillips, a central midfielder who can also be a bit more of an attacking threat, and then the right winger with right-footed winger on the left. So yeah, Josh, quick fire, what ordering are you doing the priorities on these?
Left back first. Hard to call between the winger and the attacking midfielder. I'm gonna go winger, then attacking midfielder. I'll put the other eight last, and that's because I believe in Adam Forshaw as as terribly high risk as that is. I believe and pray.
I'd probably go with left back first, because we know that that's probably going to be the area of the squad which is going to need to some. I mean, there isn't a left back in the squad, really, is there? So yeah, that's probably first priority. Then I'd go with the 8/6, because I have less faith in Adam Forshaw, given that I mean, it has nothing to do
with sense. It's probably the sensible option.
It's nothing to do with him. It's rather the fact that you don't play football for 2 years and then you're expected to come back and play an ultra specific role at an even higher level, the highest level that he's ever played at, which he has with Middlesbrough. But I think that that's probably going to take its toll, unfortunately. So I'd probably put that one second. Then the number eight, the more attacking eight, I think, because we've seen obviously this season Tyler Roberts. I quite like how he's done, how he's played in recent weeks. You know, he's the player who takes the ball from the defense to the attack, and I think sometimes people close their eyes and just go, oh look, now it's in the opposite half, and who's done that? But I quite like what he's done. I think we should give him more of a chance. Whether that's there, whether, you know, we got Rodrigo, who's also there, who can do that. But then I as much as what we said on this episode and on the previous one, I do think that, you know, Jack Harrison is the likelihood is he's probably going to be bought permanently this summer. So it's one of those where you think, do you want to spend 10, 11 million, which again wouldn't be very much in Premier League terms, on a player who you know you're going to replace immediately? I mean, if anyone's got Victor Orta's number, then please let us know. But yeah, I can't see that being the case. I can see that other positions would need to be prioritized, and then you're obviously getting towards the end of the transfer window when you work through your priorities. So yeah, it's for me it would be left back first.
A similar question from Neil Foote, who says, really enjoyed the series. Which positions would you prioritise if we can only sign one or two? I think we've covered that. But interesting addition to that, would you rather see a new left-back and Dallas in midfield, or a new eight plus Dallas at left-back? Joe, how would you answer that one?
Ooh, if you'd asked me this at the start of this series, I probably would have said a new eight and Dallas at left-back. But I've been really, really impressed. I think he's just Mr. Versatile. Like, it's just, I think he's arguably been, apart from the first few games of the season with Matthias Klick, who was very good in those games, I think he's been the best player in that position we've had this season, in over the past 6-7 weeks. I don't think it's any coincidence that him and Roberts having some stability and continuity in the middle there has coincided with the best form of the season. You know, 6 games unbeaten. Obviously, he goes out to the right against Brighton. I'm not saying that that's the sole reason for the failings, but I think that Dallas, I think he could definitely play eight for another season.
How about you, Josh?
Yeah, I think I agree with Joe, although I'm maybe less high on Dallas just purely because I think it's broken our attacking a little bit. It's not necessarily his fault. Like, it's not through something that he's done or not done. It's just Klick is a much more capable sort of link player in that midfield. I think there could be other ways to get our attacking output up again with him still in there. So, and I think a left back is vital. I'm also enjoying that. By the way,
is one of our own.
I was gonna mention that at some point.
One thing I would say about Dallas is, isn't it interesting how last season we hated seeing Dallas in central midfield and wanted to play him at left back, and this season I think it's the other way around. And I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that when he was playing at left back in the Championship, he wasn't having to do a lot of build up play from the back and transition the ball because we were in the ascendancy in a lot of games, whereas this time around we need a more defensive minded midfielder, and he's made that big difference. So I think for me I'd probably go with the central midfielder first and then the left back second, mainly because I think we need to have a left back who is going to be able to help us progress the ball, and we'll probably still need Dallas to do a bit of a plugging job in the central midfield spaces as well. One final question in the sort of general positions area from Brian Williams. I know that a lot of people have been interested in this question, but he says, are there any under 23s who could fill some of the roles needed? Josh, how would you go about answering that? Because there's a lot of people out there who think, you know, it's all well and good looking to the transfer market to solve problems, but we've got an academy for a reason. So who do you see out of the potential players who could come up from the academy who could help us out in terms of the positions that we've been looking at?
It's interesting because obviously Huggins has made his debut already in the Premier League, but I have little to no expectation that he will get real minutes next season. I think if we sign a left back, which I think we definitely are going to sign a left back, then they will play the majority of the time and Stuart Dallas will play there as and when he's needed. So I don't expect to see Huggins in there. I think it's not a player, it's not a position that we've spoken about in this series, but because there's no reason to. But I think Cody Drame could get a couple of games, short appearances, perhaps at right back. I think he's got really high potential, and I think he's physically looks like a man already. And I think maybe you wouldn't say that out of all of our under 23s at the moment. I don't see Jack Jenkins as an answer in midfield at the moment, as much as I think he's a really nice, tidy player who I have high hopes for in terms of his career. But I don't think he's going to fit either of those midfield roles that we've talked about. He looked very out of place against Crawley. I felt for him, actually. I thought he was a bit thrown to the wolves there. Maybe one of Gelhart or Greenwood could play some minutes in that attacking midfield role. I don't think we'll see that with Greenwood. I think Gelhart could have a chance. I would love to see it, but equally I'd caveat all of this by saying that I don't think Bielsa trusts the under 23s in the way that some people perhaps think that he does. That's my own feeling. And the other one to mention is Somerville. We've obviously talked a lot about wingers, and a lot of people are crying for Somerville because he's really exciting to watch, like great dribbler, and he's had good impact on 23's games recently. But I would be pretty concerned about his physicality in the Premier League. I think if you think Ian Pervada gets knocked off the ball, then I think we would see Somerville getting ragdolled all over the place. And my honest feeling is that I think Somerville's future is back in Holland. But I think he's very good, but I'm not sure if he's going to be a Premier League player. But
you clearly saw the penalty spat that they had on Monday, then him and Greenwood, didn't you? You're like, right, that's it. Get him shipped back off. That's it.
I did hear about that, but I haven't seen it.
It was all very, very tame.
I swear there's been a penalty spat over every penalty that the under 23s.
Normally, because it's Tyler Roberts bullying under 23s players.
Yeah. There was. I think there was a Roberts and Greenwood one, and they called rank and gave it to Roberts. But this one was Charlie Cresswell said actually after the game, he went, "Well, I knew that Sam was going for top goal scorer, so I said, listen, Cree, give Sam the penalty, and I just had to grab the ball off him. And the fact he was still standing around. While Sam Greenwood was trying to take the penalty, so the referee just went, right, you're getting booked. So he booked him, and then Somerville sort of rolls the ball under his foot kind of very nonchalantly just to knock it off the spot, and you're thinking, this is kids stuff, and then you remember that they are actually kids. So yeah. But yeah, it was all a bit funny. But I think to answer the same question, I like that you brought up Cody Drame first, because physically I think he's probably about, I mean, it's always difficult to tell, but 6 to 12 months away from being able to deputize. He is, I mean, consistently one of the best players when they play in the 23s. Physically, he's dominant over a lot of the players he goes up against one-on-ones. And I think, I mean, I we all know that he has the same capability to motor on and motor up the pitch, whether that's down the wing or inside. I think he's better coming inside, much like Ayling, than being hemmed in down the wing. So I think, yeah, in terms of right back, I'd be quite optimistic about Drame maybe playing a few minutes next season. But I think another year of 23's football would be good for him, because I think he's still only 18. And yeah, I think after that, he could be potentially pushing, depending on what happens with Ayling. But yeah, the Gelhart Greenwood debate, I always I always feel bad because I'm pouring cold water on it, but the step up from PL2 Division 2 to the actual Premier League is immense. I've been impressed with both of them massively, but the step up is huge, and it wouldn't be right to say they can or they can't, because until they get tested, until they get tried either as a deputy to Bamford or playing in that 8/10, which Greenwood has predominantly played in as opposed to Gelhardt, I think there's the next test for them is the upper level of PL2, because then you come up against Man United, Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea, you know, the best of the best, the creme de la creme, who for years have been able to pluck players from wherever in the UK and abroad and put them in the 23. So I'd probably say with caution, I quite like Drame's chances, perhaps in about 6 to 8 months' time, of maybe playing a little bit more regularly.
We've got plenty more questions to go, and I'm seeing lots of questions in the chat. Sorry for not getting to those questions. We have got a list of questions that I'm trying to work my way through. Let's move on to some individual positions, and let's try and keep it shortish so that we can get through as many as possible. Andrew Smith says, I wondered if you guys had considered the centre forward position. If Bamford gets injured, we're in trouble, aren't we? And I think we've sort of semi-touched on it in terms of talking about players like Cody Gakpo, who can play as a forward. I guess Noah Long as well, you would throw in there into that group. I think that would be the way that we would go about it. Like, the best way of building the squad is to get those players who have that ability to play multiple positions. But yeah, I'll throw this over to you, Joe. Any other thoughts on strikers? Would you just be happy going that route that we talked about, of like playing players like Gakpo and Long to just get that double coverage, as it were?
Yeah, I think that's the only feasible way to do this at the moment, because, you know, Patrick Bamford scored 14 goals. He's got 7 assists. Yeah, he's going through a bit of a drought at the moment, but you can't realistically replace that type of player, especially when they're so integral to the team dynamic as well. Everything that he does off the ball, you know, if he was a pure Mauro Icardi type who just didn't do anything unless it was inside the 18-yard box, then yeah, potentially you could say, yeah, we need somebody who's going to be more involved in build-up. But I think Bamford's influence has been massive this season. The problem is, Bielsa, I said this yesterday as well, Bielsa doesn't like anybody kicking their heels around the training ground knowing that they're not going to play. So why would you spend upwards of 20 million, as it probably would be at the very least, on a striker who knows that they're going to be playing second fiddle to Bamford? So the likelihood is that you'd have to go with somebody who can play another position primarily, and as a secondary sort of position, they could be the deputy to Bamford.
I'm going to move on to the next question just so we can get through a few of these quick fire. Edward Atterton says, great series, goalkeepers. If we can offload Kasia, who is a possible replacement, any chance that Bielsa thinks Caprila is up to the job of number two? Josh, you've watched a lot of the under-23s this season. I'm guessing you're going to say probably not, but what's your take on the goalkeeper situation?
Yeah, I think I would want probably an experienced backup to come in. But that's hard to find the right kind of player, and I don't have the answer to this one in terms of who is the actual player that I want. I would need to dig into that a little bit more. But yeah, I'm not thinking that Caprile is the one.
Yeah, and Thomas Wilson, who has already been in touch, the guy who runs Focus on Leeds, which you should check out, it's a brilliant outlet. He talks about wingers, and he says, when looking at wingers, do you think their defensive stats are massively important? And this is something that I think for me is quite important. Whenever I'm looking at wingers, I'm always interested in seeing what their pressing numbers are, with the caveat that, you know, there are team effects that are in play. So a lot of wide players will be in situations where they're playing in teams who aren't able to or aren't encouraging them to press high. So you sort of have to look through their historical data, and then you have to do eye test stuff on them as well in terms of trying to work out how commensurable they would be in a team like Leeds that they have to, you know, do that tracking back. Joe mentioned the goal that Leeds gave away against Liverpool where Jack Harrison was caught, I think, on a couple of occasions in quite quick succession by Trent Alexander-Arnold dropping in behind the wide play in Jack Harrison. Either of you two want to add anything on that in terms of the pressing aspects of wingers?
I think it's hard to try and quantify it. particularly if the players, some of these players that we've looked at, where we don't have easily available pressing data like we have with some of these players that we can look on FBref for or something like that. So basically just the players in the top five leagues or players that have played in the European, the continental competitions. Even with those players, it's so much about what you see. Like, does the player look like they've got the physical attributes to press, and do they look like they've sort of got the intensity to their game that they could do that? Because what we always have to bear in mind is what system do they play in. So that there might be players that are really capable of being great pressers, but they're playing in a team where they're told sit in a block, and so they're not going to press. So I think sometimes it's about sort of trying to make your best educated guess on that. I mean, that's the truth of all scouting, I guess. Yeah. But I think pressing is one of the more difficult areas, I think, to really confidently guess.
If I was a better host, I would have moved this question slightly further up when we were talking about strikers. But Kevin Flannery says, do you think we've seen the end of Rodrigo in the eighth spot, allowing him to concentrate on the centre forward role? Let's keep this one short. I don't think you or I, Josh, are particularly positive about Rodrigo as a nine in this system.
I think I like him more in the attacking midfield role, actually. I like him receiving the ball just over halfway and being able to sort of spin players and then play the ball forwards. That's what I wanted when he came on at Brighton. I was shocked when he came on at nine.
Hmm. How about you, Joe?
I mean, yeah, he barely had a kick, really, didn't he, against Brighton? I think it was one of those where he thought, I mean, a lot of people did think he was, you know, Spain's number nine, as he was dubbed, coming in to play the number nine. But I think it's become quite clear that that's not the case. And like Josh, I prefer him as an 8/10. I think one of the things that always made him very good at Valencia was that he was creative and he always had somebody else to play off, like a Maxi Gomez type player, Kevin Gamero, those types of players who were more notorious goal getters. Whereas, yeah, Rodrigo, I think, I'm holding my powder on Rodrigo until he's been given a full preseason, until he's up to speed, until he's not playing catch up because of COVID and whatnot. I think there's obviously a fantastic player in there, but it's just about getting the opportunity to show it. And unfortunately, injuries and whatnot have meant that that's not been the case. So yeah, if we're going to see more of him, I think it'll definitely be in the 8/10.
Moving on to sort of transfer business more properly. So Richard Lang, no relation to Noah, I don't believe, but he says you've gone for Perot, Sumare, Buendia and Kent. Has anything changed in the last couple of months to change this plan? And how realistic do we believe it will be to land any/all of these players? Now, I think it would be very unlikely that we would land all of these players, but I guess the beauty of Orta's list is that these would be the priority players. So you'd have a short list of a few players and you'd work your way down the short list, and you will have a priority position where you'll try and get the top player, and then obviously you'll fill everything beneath that. I think one of the things that both Josh and I have learned working in the industry is that it's a real throw things at a wall and see what sticks approach to when it comes to transfer business. There's so many moving parts, there's so much that can potentially go wrong, there's so many people who you have to satisfy. Like, the club has to be satisfied, the manager has to be satisfied, the player themselves has to be satisfied, the agent has to be satisfied. So I think there's a lot going on in any of these sorts of transfer negotiations. So I do think that it would be very unlikely that, you know, Leeds would end up getting all four of these players, but also all four of players of this sort of caliber in those positions. It will be a case where we'll get a couple of good ones, and then there'll be maybe a couple of players who maybe wouldn't be the ideal options as well. I don't know if either of you wanted to add anything on that.
I think our chances of getting Buendia are slim to none, and I think Samare Samare is not happening either. But
he's going to Leicester.
If we were to do this again, I would redo episode 2. I think I'd try to come up with a different list for that particular one, where we could maybe look at some different players. So I think if he came out top of that, perhaps we could have had some different options there. I wouldn't be surprised if we signed Perreault, because I think we've been linked quite heavily. And I think we are going to go for Kent based on what the things that I've heard so far. But I think that's probably going to be met with a sorry no. So then it's what happens from there. And I think the fact that we've heard these other wingers being mentioned recently suggests that the club are spreading their options already, as we know they would.
Zach Palmer says, for the left back and eight positions, you identified a player in each position from both RZ and Brest. Do you think we'd have any issues acquiring two key players from the same club? I'll throw this one over to you, Joe. What do you think about the possibility of getting two players from the same club?
It's buy one, get one free deal would be great on Romain Perreault and Romain Favre, wouldn't it? But it depends which one you're paying for. I think it would complicate it, I think. I think, again, what you were saying, John, on transfers, it's a case-by-case basis, because it's not as if all you're doing is agreeing a fee with Stade Brest or AZ. You know, you have to appease the representatives of both these players. And I think... I think it would be unlikely. I don't think it would be necessarily difficult if you decided that they were the two players across the entirety of the footballing world which were best suited to adding something to your team, and they just so happened to play at the same team. Then I don't think you'd have too many issues going after them both. But I think if you were trying to arrange some sort of package deal, then you'd probably have to pay over the odds, at least on the second one. Because, you know, you can't, it essentially is just financial flexing when you do that. So I think with Brest, you know, you look at the cash crisis that France, the French football scene is having. So potentially, I can't remember the sporting director's name. I think he's Gregory something, very French name, who said something about the fact that, was it Romain Favre, they probably would accept something in the region of 15 to 20 million. Which led me to believe that, you know, obviously if Romain Perreault were to come to Leeds, it wouldn't be any more than that, because obviously, you know, midfielders and forwards tend to cost more. But I think it probably will be a bit unlikely.
Yeah, last two questions then, and both of these looking forward questions. We had a long question from Dan Holdsworth. Dan likes to write these long hypothetical questions, which I always enjoy, but we probably don't have time to go through it in detail. But he's talking about the midfield positions, and there will be potentially five or six players fighting for one spot in the attacking midfield role. And he wants to know about who you have to get rid of, because you can't end up with a bloated squad if you end up with all of the players that we're looking for. So I'll make this a more general question about departures. I'll start with you, Josh. Who are the sorts of players that you think Leeds need to be thinking about moving on?
I think the obvious ones are, out of the regulars, is I think we know that Alioski is likely to go. I think that we're probably all expecting Berardi and Pablo to go. They're not really contributing, as sad as that might be. And then from there, I think Costa is certainly, if we do get another winger, I think Costa would go. Alternatively, you could loan Poveda out to give him more minutes in the Championship or something like that, and then keep Costa. A winger, I think, would go. And I think Jamie Shackleton is probably considering what he wants. That would make me really sad, because I really love Shackleton. And I think I've always felt he could offer a lot to us. But for whatever reason, it hasn't quite worked for him. He always gets injured whenever he gets in the team. He might want to go to somewhere where he can play a lot. So I think that's the additional outgoing that I might expect.
Mm. Joe, would you add anyone to that?
I'd probably add Kassir to that. I know that he has a contract till 2023, but I mean, if you just add an S to the end of his name and sell him as a Spanish goalkeeper, then, you know, if there's a sporting director across Europe with who's a bit sloppy with the details, you know, Kiko and Iker sound kind of similar. So, but no, I think you look at the outgoings and you've got to say, well, Alioski's likely because obviously that contract is on the table. He hasn't accepted. He hasn't indicated that he would be staying or leaving. So it's kind of up in the air stage. I think as hard as it is to accept, of course, you know, Pablo hasn't really had any impact, especially in 2021. You know, a few cameos off the bench, his own personal situation. I think Berardi, with his contract expiring, it's as sentimental as it would be. You'd be very, very hard pushed to see a Premier League club give a contract essentially to a player for 2 years who's not actually going to play any football. Kassir, Pablo, Berardi, and Alioski probably are the likely ones. Kassir might be more difficult to shift, but I think they're probably the ones that you're looking at.
Big wages.
Yeah.
Right, so the final question then from MOT Tweets, just about where we would end up with all of these players that we've talked about. So if we do sign all the players you mentioned, or at least in the four positions you've mentioned, then where do you think we finish next season? A similar season to the one we've just had, or a little better and maybe greater emphasis on a cup run if we can? Joe, what do you make of that?
I think when you have a bigger squad, it's a lot easier to have a cup run. You know, it's no coincidence that we see Manchester City competing on three fronts and they're able to field two separate £200 million lineups every week. When you have a bigger squad, you're able to do that. I think the fact that Leeds under Bielsa have been so woeful in cup competitions is that it's, you know, you're having to put in a fair amount of under 23s or a fair amount of players who haven't played very much. I think, sorry, could you repeat the original question, John? I've completely blanked there.
It's just about where you think where do you finish? Yeah.
I think it'd be realistic to sort of expect the same sort of in and around the same area. You know, we could finish 12th, we could finish 9th this season. I think that would probably be that ballpark would be a reasonable expectation, I think, for next season, even with the additions, because it's, as Bielsa has always said, it's evolution, not revolution. So you can't expect monumental change every single year.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a bit of a misguided expectation that if we get these positions that we need, that suddenly we're catapulted into the top six. I don't think things work as simply as that. Ask Wolves how that goes when they've upgraded their team every year since coming into the Premier League, and they've sort of plateaued. It's hard to move forwards, and you need a bit of luck, and you need to not have your star striker get injured for the whole season and thing, all of that kind of stuff. It's hard to predict, but I think we would finish maybe a bit more comfortably in the kind of position that we're already in, a bit more convincingly. In that kind of position, and then you're in another summer where you can think, now can we look to climb up a little bit?
Yeah, I think the one thing I would add to that is that we are now playing a style of football that I don't think is ideal, and I don't think anyone at the club wants us to be playing in the way that we are. And I think bringing in four players will allow us to play a different way, but we'll have to develop that style again, and it will take a pre-season, it will take probably 6 months of Premier League football for us to pick up that style again that Bielsa wants to be playing, that ideal style. And so I think it's just quite unlikely that we're just going to hit the floor running at the beginning of next season. I think it's going to be very much a transitional season where we start trying to implement some of those ideas that we saw being played in the Championship, which we tried to play at the beginning of this season, but decided that we were giving up way too many good chances to the opposition, so we decided not to do it. So yeah, I think I'm of the same opinion. I think we should be looking to finish mid-table, but finish there a lot more comfortably. I think we've had pretty good variance this season. I think we've pretty much won most of the games you would expect us to win. There's not been many games where we've been unlucky. There's been a couple here and there, maybe the Wolves games, but I think there's probably been slightly more games where we've been the recipients of luck. So I think you sort of accept that the same thing could happen the other way around next season, but we'll be probably playing a high level of football. So I think that's what we should be aiming for. Nice football and a mid-table finish. Let's call it a day there. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you both, as always. It was good fun to talk about those three players at the beginning, and there's certainly going to be a really fun summer coming up with some, if names of those sorts of quality are going to be the ones that are bandied around. Joe, thank you so much for coming on this series. No doubt we'll have you on again in the future if we carry on doing these a little bit more sporadically. But thanks so much for coming on. Anything you want to push, feel free to push Scouted stuff. Feel free to push Leeds Live stuff.
No, nothing really. Just if you've sort of enjoyed these sorts of live streams, then consider supporting the guys over at All Stats, aren't we? Because you know the stuff they put out is fantastic. It's kind of been regularly one of the ports of call that I'll go to if I want to get a bit of bit of insight, a bit of level-headedness sometimes, which I think is needed amongst everybody who watches Leeds at times, I think myself included. So yeah, it's been a pleasure to be on. Thank you for inviting me, and I'd be delighted to do anything like this again.
And again, I push the Scouted football stuff, but your podcast is very similar to this in tone and to this kind of approach. So looking at players, particularly young players, and trying to work out their career trajectories as well. So if players, if any of the listeners do want to check out the Scouted football podcast in particular, where should they go?
On any major podcast app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, all the usual places, just search Scouted Football Podcast and it'll be there. And there's around 60 episodes on there, which hopefully probably the ones from this season won't be out of date. They're all on sort of specific clubs and specific stories and specific regions about scouting players and who's excitable from certain areas. But yeah, thank you. Thanks, John.
The Josh, the recent episodes have some really great adverts as well that you should you should check out.
Yeah, let's just leave that to the listeners' imaginations. Josh, it's been great to have you on as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about 5 yards before we close?
Yeah, just if you've enjoyed these players that we've talked about, maybe you know them a little bit and you want to get involved, head over to 5 yards. You can write scout reports yourselves, or you can buy those players and join in, see how their value rises, be rewarded as they perform with performance pay and so on. Yeah, it'd be great if you do that.
And if you do want to check that out, go to the website 5yards.link/ASAW and see what's going on over there. I think this is it for Victor Autor's List. I came up with a name, didn't I? I can't even remember it. But it's been great fun. Hope you guys have enjoyed it as much as me. And that's it from us. But we'll be back with other things. Do check out our Twitter page, and there'll be stuff going up there all the time. We may try and make these a sort of monthly thing, and just sort of do a roundup of everything that's going on. So keep an eye on our Twitter page to see any news of that. But with that, let's get to the end of this series, and I'll say thank you to you both, and goodbye to everyone who's been listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best. the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.